Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to the latest Anfield Index Under Pressure podcast. My name's Dan Kennett, and with me to discuss the fantastic win against Newcastle and the Derby draw, I do have, at the moment we are one man short, just got some emergency childcare issues to take care of. That's Phil. But I do have our resident data collection pressing and video analyst, Mr. Daniel Rhodes. Evening, Rhodesy.
Evening, mate. Evening, yes, that was a good win. Not so much the performance, but we'll come on to that.
It was, yeah. And I do have our most practiced sports scientist currently with Derby Ladies. Si, this is your night off, I guess, from training.
No, it's just after.
Just after. How did your game go yesterday?
We were first team 1-5-0, and ours, which is the top academy, 1-3-0 away. It was very nice with Darren.
And how was Fraser Forster for them? Rubbish, yeah. We don't need to talk about that. Right, okay. But we have an absolutely packed agenda, and we are gonna, you know, I'm do sorry guys if I do cut across you, and you know, could to wrap things up at some points, but we have got so much to get through, so many talking points right now to do with the Reds, and we're going to start with the biggest one. We're going to do this first, just like we did with the United pod ahead of both the matches, and that is to discuss the general physical condition of the squad, and as well as the injury situation, which seems to be, touch wood, improving. So, Si, right, we have been outrun in terms of total distance, in each Premier League game this season. And we've had fewer, higher intensity runs each match as well. So that's, we already covered the details on the first three pods, first three games on the United pod. But in this in these two matches, Newcastle had 170 high-intensity runs more than us, and Everton had 96. Newcastle covered 2.5k more distance than us, and Everton 3k more. We also picked up another hamstring injury. Si, what is going on? How can you,
who knows?
You make any sense of it all? Can you make any sense of it all?
Well, if you look at the numbers and you look at the number of injuries and the type of injuries, you would look at if we did an audit. If I just went to a new club and I was taking over as head of performance at the new club, we immediately look at an injury audit, and you would look at the previous 3 years of the playing staff and see huge swell of soft tissue injuries and hamstring injuries, and immediately look through the loading patterns or the overloading of players in the previous season, or there is an issue with recovery modalities, or have they all suddenly got new cars and their seats are too clear, steering wheels.
Oh, yeah.
Weird things. But this is weird that it's so many and it's such an established backroom staff that the key outliers, they don't fit. My feeling is that this has to be a legacy of overplaying, not just last year. I think people don't quite grasp the intensity that Liverpool have played with for the period of time that they have with largely the same players.
Yeah.
I think it's fairly unprecedented to have 14 of the same players for 5 years at competing at level of quality that they have, but also intensity of running that they have throughout COVID, throughout the two shortest pre-seasons in history, off-seasons in history, and a short pre-season, and the stupid AFCON. Like, it's a bit, I appreciate that nobody else has got this catastrophic injury record, but I would suggest also that there isn't a club in the country that's had the volume of players we've had for the same amount of time that's also also done the same amount of running, because there's been turnover at every other club for one reason or another.
Yeah, okay. So, in terms of just in the importance of the two statistics I mentioned, you said outrun is not hugely important typically. It's just a bit embarrassing to be outrun, you know, in terms of total distance, right? That's it's not hugely significant. The really important one, though, is the high intensity runs, right? That's a red flag, right?
Well, just for example, that James Milner still runs 12.5 or 13K a game.
Hmm.
Does that look like Kante running 13K a game?
Yeah,
no. So one guy's jogging around, and anybody can run 13 kilometers. Not even fit person, any average jogger can run 13K in an hour and 60 minutes.
Mm.
An hour and 30 minutes. So it's not that hard. So it's all about the intensity. It's about high intensity, and we win the sprint distance. We impose ourselves on the opposition by sprinting more and faster than them and forcing them to have to both react to it but also sustain that level of intensity so much that Pep writes a bloody book about it and never shuts up about the term intensity. And we have lost the sprint distance in every single game this season apart from one. Do you know which game that was?
That was Shield?
Yeah.
The Charity Shield.
We actually won the sprint distance in that one, did we?
We won the sprint distance in that game, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, you are doing a fatigue index on this dedicated to tomorrow, hopefully with some industry colleagues, right? So, but I did reach out in the Under Pressure chat earlier on to ask people about what questions they want to ask on this. So I want you to give a very quick response to each of these few questions that we got. These are the most popular ones. First of all, aside, you've already touched on it. So let's start with burnout, possibility of burnout, the lack of turnover of players, huge amount of minutes played last season, a lot of players close to or over their career max. Is there a risk that this is burnout? And if so, what happens next with burnout?
It absolutely is a risk of burnout. As I said before, I think this is unprecedented, the number of players that have been at their career like max for such a long period of time. My feeling is ally that to the age of the player, then you're increasing injury risk there, or you're increasing a detriment of performance like significantly. I just think we guess at this point, but that seems the most likely guess.
You think burnout is the most likely?
I think burnout is the most likely. I think it's, yeah. There are a couple of other possibilities, but they just seem like, is Klopp tactically choosing to not run?
Well, that was the next question. Let's do that. So that's the next one, right? That was asked by about three or four people, actually. As in, this is, are we making a choice? Is this a choice to almost like physically be within ourselves for some reason? Do you buy that as an option?
Do you know what? It is something I thought about. It's possible, right? But when you've forged, like, these lads, they are forged of a certain mentality. Like, they refuse to be budged from the ultimate, absolute, hardened steel, fighting to win at every cost, refuse to give an inch. If you turn that psychology down 1%, is this what we get? I don't know. But I think...
It used to be called, you know, we've got better players, but we also tried harder. We also put more effort.
Yes.
And that's where success comes from. And then suddenly the manager says, right, you just need to drop off a little bit. Those players, I think, would be incredibly confused about what does that mean.
See, the reason why I'm sceptical on that one is because, you know, we're opening ourselves up to that maxim that hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard, yeah? So if we're choosing not to work hard, it just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I think there's an extra, I don't know, strand of that in that, do we think we're working smarter?
Yeah.
I think there's a possibility that we think we've constructed something tactical, which we believe is a smarter, a more efficient way to expend energy so that we can sustain it over a long period of the season, or we could make up for knowing that our players are fatigued and can't do the same absolute output during a game, physical output. So we've created this different tactical way of playing, so we don't need to be quite as intense at all times. Mm. I think that's possible. But it
doesn't match up with the results or the performance data, especially on the defensive side. Anyway. And the final one, is if it is players, if it's a consequence of pre-season, not necessarily load from last season, if it's a consequence of pre-season decisions, right? Let's just take there's two scenarios here. The players are either overcooked or undercooked. So if it's one of those two things, what happens next?
So I would believe that that's possible in regards to injuries. I don't think it makes any difference on any given day as to how much a player runs.
Okay.
So that makes sense. Go on.
All I would say is, Dan, are these not linked? So if Klopp and the backroom staff have got the information about players not being as capable as what they were, then obviously he's going to have to say, okay, I want you to put everything in. It's not a drop-off as such, but he knows then that the team's got to play in a slightly different way, with a bit less intensity, because it's one leads to the other, doesn't it?
Hmm.
And is he going to have the information about how much these players are capable of sprinting?
Yeah.
You think that's so?
That my conclusion is that's a very real possibility, that he sees that some of his historically key players, or players that he definitely has to pick right now because of injuries, can't do the physical things that they previously could. So we have to modify the tactics to adjust around that, which means a drop-off in overall running numbers for everybody. I think that's very possible. But it's possible that two things are true. That's true, but the injuries have occurred because of an error of loading before that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So this drew in all three questions, yeah?
Yeah. So the last time we discussed this, Si, you also said that if the players have been overcooked, then they could be suffering in the short term, but will benefit in the medium and long term, right? Is that, based on what's happened since then, another three matches, do you still think that's a feasible scenario? Do you think it's the players are potentially incapable of running more right now, but it might be okay, you know, in the next few weeks?
You don't get tired. You don't get... tired for 5 weeks.
Okay.
So the first week and a half, 2 weeks of this two game season, I would give that as a possibility. There is, I suppose, a possibility that they can continue pre-season through the first three games of the season, because there are two blank weeks midweek and we could have been training really hard during that time. So just like in pre-season, the players can't quite do as much. That is a possibility. But I would be sacking people if that was the case, given the amount of injuries we've suffered and the actual results. So, but it's possible. I just think it would be such an egregious strategy, an egregious mistake of strategy, that we would be sacking people all over the show.
But we did have the head doctor leave, didn't we, just before the season? Was that just a coincidence?
Head doctors don't do anything, dude.
All right, okay. So he's a figurehead.
I would happily talk to everybody about like roles at clubs. But the head doctor is the guy that decides training modes. The head doctor was ended up being the head of performance and medical for 2 years. It's a new role. They kind of loosely oversee. Basically, they make sure that the people underneath them are doing the jobs that they're employed to do and reporting to the right people. That's all. It's like an accountability. It's not a strategy-driving role at all.
Okay. So based on what you were saying about the extension of pre-season, right, we are now in the busy period. We've just had the first three games in 8 days. So yep. I just wanted to bring in one UP layer on this. And Bart's has now joined us. Evening, Bart.
Hey, mate, you're right.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Everything okay?
Getting it. Yeah, I'm good, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. Right.
I'm bloody exhausted from all the coding all night.
Mate, that's because I'll come to that why I was up later on. It's linked to what's just happened. But anyway, we'll move on.
So one of the things that we layered onto this, Bart, was... this idea that we've been morphing into a possession team or a team which is based on control. And then looking at the possession numbers for the start of this season. And one thing is that the way I phrased it to you, Bart, was is the current incarnation of what we've been fielding in the six matches this season, right? Is that team ill-suited to having as much possession as we are? And I think the answer is, we've looked at it, and I think it's yes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, because quite rightly, our possession has been relatively high, around the 70s, I think, for all games. I can't remember the exact average. So
Everton was the lowest, 64.
64, right? So we have had the possession, which normally would have led to us creating higher numbers of XG or better quality, should we say?
Yeah.
Because last year, XG per shot has been in around 10%, isn't it, I think?
Yeah.
Whereas we would normally have been up 20s for several opportunities. Yeah. So I think you and me looked at it, and I think you looked at the units, and several players are down, 5%, particularly in the key area, which I think is midfield. Yeah. If we can't get the ball to the forwards, then there's very little they can do, and particularly if we can't get the ball to the forwards in good areas.
Yeah.
So we can't do that. And I think Trent, being our playmaker, is also down a few notches. Was it 4% you said recently? Yeah. Is that right?
Just before we come onto that, I just say that, you know, as you might expect, there is a very strong relationship between possession numbers and pass completion. And I just put it in the live show chat, but there are exceptions to that. You know, that relationship. And unfortunately, Liverpool this season are an exception, because we're not, it's not quite a linear relationship, but it's a strong one though, isn't it? If you looked at that.
Yeah, 0.7 is good, is a very good relationship. And I think also it bears fruit by the fact that, I mean, let's be frank, City are a fantastic passing side, right?
Mm.
So that they're bang on the line there.
The point is the relationship holds for all teams in the Premier League. And so all I did was it's in the live show chat, put a scatter plot in of every Premier League team since the 2017-18 season. So, what was interesting though, when you think about pass completion, what does that mean? I was trying to think, okay, so we're not very good. Our pass completion numbers are low compared to the amount of possession we're having here. And the end result of that is a turnover ball, right? Now, it's worthwhile noting that the pass completion doesn't even include crosses and corners.
Yeah.
They're separate. They're excluded. So it's effectively what you would call open play passes, but not including crosses. So the bread and butter of a team, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you rank all Premier League teams since 2017-18, we've got the second most incomplete passes of any team We got 107 per match. We had 89 against Everton, so slightly under the average. We were averaging 107 incomplete passes per match. And if that's the second worst of any team in the Premier League since 17-18, only Southampton under Hasen, one season under Hasenhüttl, was worse. And I guess what the impact of that is, Bart, is that's a lot of opportunities are for teams to expose us in negative transition, right?
Yeah, and also the flip side to that is that we're not utilising positions that our eights particularly, I would think, are in, because we're not making the pass.
Yeah.
And therefore we then are susceptible. So yes, we're susceptible to negative transition, but equally we are getting in the positions to play the right pass. You know, we've all sat here and said, oh, the final ball wasn't quite there. The final pass to put X, Y, and Z in the final third wasn't quite right. And I think that shows up. We'll come onto some of the maps we've done and looking at it, but it's that our passing accuracy as we enter the final third, I think, is particularly alarming. And then you highlighted also in our own half as also is a bit disturbing in some respects. But yeah, it does leave us very open, particularly as Sy says a lot, that we commit to a tactical plan. So then when the fundamental basics of passing the ball between two red shirts goes wrong, we are very susceptible to the counter. As we saw against Newcastle before the first goal, there was three or four opportunities where they went straight through the midfield.
Yeah.
Because we were set to do a move, gave the ball away, and they just went bang and went straight through the middle of the park.
So just on the quick, just quickly to explain the table I put into the live show chat.
Yep.
That is every team ranked, obviously just the ones at the top and the bottom. And so the average for a team in the Premier League since 17-18 is 90 incomplete passes per match. So we're second worst with that, with 107. Mm. And then Man City have got the four lowest entries in that table. And this season's been the lowest of all with just 65 incomplete passes. I think that'll have changed after Villa when they had a lot more.
Yeah, but I said that I think that'll be an outlier for the other way, though. As you said, that's come back after Villa. So, yeah, I think.
Yeah. So, but the City the last three seasons have been low 70s. But if you look at that, if you think of that as a number, you know, that's over 40 incomplete passes more than our most important rival. Now, obviously, they're not our rivals right now because we've had such a poor start. But, you know, there's a lot of other teams down there, like Tottenham this season and last, only 74 and 76 incomplete passes again. So all we're saying is that the consequence of having poor passing it has a nug when you provide that much more opportunity for the opposition to expose it, which is a pretty big weakness at the moment, right? But
yeah, so
we're not helping ourselves, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we're not helping ourselves. Our plan has been tweaked. We've discussed that. And because we're not executing it through our ability to pass the ball at that final stage, it means we leave ourselves open to negative transition, and we haven't also then got the physical capability to make up for that because we're not doing the running, whether that's tactically or whether they haven't got the capacity. You know, I think if we were at our usual physical capability, I think you would see us covering and closing a lot of those gaps quickly because they have the capacity to do that, if that makes sense. But at the moment, because they haven't, and you're having to play Milner in midfield and people like that, it's exacerbating that situation even worse.
Yeah. So just to wrap this up quickly, because there's so much we can... I've got a tableau we can put in here as well, which we can play around with. But we do have half our team, basically, or half our regulars this season, significantly below their career averages or Liverpool norms, right? So first of all, we've got Van Dijk. He's got a 3% lower pass completion than normal. Henderson's 5% lower. Milner 5% lower. Diaz is 7% lower than last season, his half season last year. And Salah is 3% below his average as well. VVD's got some issues in his own half as well. It's 2.5% lower in his own half. And then Henderson and Milner, 4%, 3% lower in our half than normal. Trent is 5 percentage points lower in the attacking half than normal. In terms of the attacking half, James Milner's 8 percentage points below his norm in the attacking half. And Jordan Henderson is 11 percentage points worse than normal in the final third. These are just... what we're saying is that this has a consequence. You know, giving the ball away that much, Bart, does have a consequence.
For absolutely spot on, it will eventually lead to, I think what we're seeing is we're seeing instability. And I think we chatted, people know we chat every game, don't we, all of us, but it is sort of, I don't think all of us are probably fairly surprised to see the regularity in which they break on us. You know, even in Everton, they're not a great side, and yet they broke on us with speed. I mean, I've just popped in the chat there two heat maps I did for the unsuccessful passes using the Opta data. And the alarming thing you said to me was the centre of the park is one of the darkest areas. In our own half is where we're giving the ball away, which we could tattoo about tactically. Fab was exposed on his own against Everton and Newcastle. You've already said Henderson wasn't having a particularly great game, but you see Trent, his box there is not great.
I'm just before, we're not just going to pile in on Jordan Henderson.
No. It's the zones on the pitch.
To Van Dijk, to Trent, to big players. Big players.
That zone in our half is also includes the centre halves, right? Yeah. So they are coming out. You've got the full backs on opposite games. So in the Newcastle game, the left back area, we didn't.
Gomez was very wobbly, wasn't he?
And in your final third in your box, you kind of want players to take risk, right? So that's fine being a high density. It's not a problem. But it's the lead up area. So your half spaces between the 18 yard box as we look from left to right. Those are the areas where you want to make risks, but you don't want that to be a real dense area. I mean, that's averaging nearly five unsuccessful passes per zone. In Everton game, you're up at 9. Do you know what I mean? That's a hell of a lot of balls to give away in key areas of the pitch where you are likely, as we know from zone 14 and the half spaces, we're likely to create really good opportunities from those areas. And at the moment, we can't make use of us being in those areas with the ball because we give the ball away.
Yeah.
Phil, just to clarify, is that the location of the pass, not the outcome of the pass, not the location of where it finishes? So if we're attempting a lot of balls, say for Trent or Salah or Diaz, they're not successful if they're coming from that zone. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's passes between the centre backs and his holder.
No. But it is it's
the location. It's the start point of the pass, but it does include all. It does include, but you know, the point is what we're trying to say here, Rosie, is that we're providing over 40 opportunities more to the opposition because of our.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out reasons why. Is the game state not an influence as well, Dan, the fact that we keep going behind?
It could be. But if you look at our other years, we're not in that top list. We're close to the league average of 90. You know, in complete passes. So.
I mean,
some of them below. So
I could put you in if you want to go back to a game we all thought we played really well, right? So Bournemouth game day 4. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll put that in the chat if it works. Similar kind of, we weren't great in our half there. We've got a dense area in the middle of the pitch, the right back area, right back, Brazzoni still giving the ball. That's from Chris's crosses. But these little half spaces in their half are very dense areas. And that's in a game where we scored 9 goals. So, yeah, I think our standards, as we talk about our process, isn't quite right at the moment.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. Now, Si, are you okay to? Are we okay to crack on with the matches now? Is your update finished?
Doesn't look like it yet. Does Phil want to do it?
Okay. Let's crack.
What
on
do you
then.
Need?
Now we're going to go straight into the. Let's go into the Newcastle match first.
Okay.
I was going to ask Si about our 11 and our choices there, but please cover that off, Bats, and then go straight into Newcastle and Newcastle game plan.
No worries. So I'm just bringing up the map now. Sorry. Changing tabs. But yeah, so we had Fab staying in the DM role, which is good. We had Harvey keeping in the right side. I'm talking about the key area, which is midfield. The back four is the back four. Robbo kept his place. It was a bit of a discussion, but kept his place.
Still no choices really in the back four.
No. I think the weekend was interesting. We'll come to that. We'll talk about Everton. The front three, a game, there was no choices for this game. So that's the front three. And the midfield, yeah, he didn't go with Milner, obviously. He went with Henderson, Harvey and Fab. So that's, I don't think there was a lot of options for him, should we say, coming off the back of a defeat at United. Is that right? Coming off the back of a 9-0. He can't really change too much. So he's gone with that. Newcastle, largely not changed that. They brought their brand new forward into play straight up front.
Isak.
They were out there, but Bruno, and they were without Saint-Maximin. So they had no option on the left wing as an out ball, but they had an option down the middle because they swapped out. They got rid of Woods, not good, but Woods was on the bench and he's normally not an option down the middle, whereas they put Isak in, who is an option down the middle. So they just changed the channel they were putting the ball into. And in midfield, presumably they brought in Sean Longstaff, came in to play instead of Bruno. So otherwise, I think about four, they'd said they'd been mixed around the centre half really weird because, you know, we were linked with Botman, weren't we?
Yeah.
And he's on the bench for them. So yeah. I don't know what that says about him. I would have thought he would have been starting.
I think he had a couple of wobbly games, yeah.
Yeah, so So they've got Lacazette in and I can't remember the guy that played next to him. So that's it.
So we had quite an advantageous position, didn't we? Because then Newcastle were missing some big players.
Yeah, I thought we were going into this. I think we all chatted. This is a good opportunity for us to come out and build on the 9-0 and put a good performance down.
Yeah. Okay. And now, Rosie, this is a really interesting match summary.
Yeah, it's kind of... It kind of a reflection of the season averages as well. So obviously it was 2-1, but the non-penalty XG was 1.6 to 0.7. Little bit of change. I think the models kind of agreed. Kayleigh had his highest at 1.8. Nocturne Statsbomb had us at 1.5. But we had 23 shots in this game, 5, which is always excellent. That isn't the volume of shots is great. The issue, and although we did have 16 shots in the box to 2, and 6 shots on target to 2, which has kind of been our benchmark throughout, it's the quality. We've talked about all the build-up and stuff. It's the quality of chances. We had 50 touches in the box to 4.
50, yeah.
50
yeah.
to 4.
And 3 of those Newcastle ones were in injury time.
Yeah.
So they had 1 in the first 90 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
1 touch in the box.
1 touch in the box. But that 1 touch in the box... Was the goal. It's a big chance.
Yeah.
So, and we only had 1 big chance each. And this is the key for the whole season. I know Phil said we're down at 10%. I've got us at 12 shot quality this season and the opposition at 12, which is good. But it's 2 massive outliers. So we've got the Bournemouth game and the Fulham game. Yeah. Where we're at 20% and 19%.
Yeah, so it's going to move it up. Yeah.
Whereas the rest... So 19% against Fulham, 21% against Bournemouth, 9% against Palace, 9% against Man United, in the last 2 games against Newcastle and Everton, 7 and 8. Now it's like those horrible Burnley games where we used to have 30 shots and 1 big chance or no big chances. It's no good having a high volume of shots that we're having at the moment. 20 shots we averaged this season a game, 19.5, but it's no point. We have to have the shot call. There's no point having 50 touches in the box. There's no point having 15 shots in the box. They have to be good quality shots. I'd rather have 10 shots and 3 big chances. We've talked about it so often. We were at our best ever non-shot XG levels this season at under Klopp, 2.7. To 0.9 non-shot XG.
Let's jump in, Rosie, just to remind everybody that non-shot XG is everything that happens in and around the opposition penalty box, except shots.
Yeah, and we're having loads. In this Newcastle game, it was 3 to 0.8. It's massive amounts. So we're having a high volume of shots and a high volume of non-shot XG. 50 touches in the box. But 1 big chance. We could only muster 1. And that tells you, and that one was a through ball, so it's kind of on the break. It was a lovely move, and it's a through ball to Diaz, who goes around the keeper and puts it off the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because their defence wasn't set. Diaz makes a run into the box, is 1v1 with the keeper, goes around him, and that's the kind of shot quality that we want.
That's 0.6, wasn't it? Right,
yeah.
Yeah, should have scored that. Really should have scored,
but this we're just one chance a game like that is not good enough.
Nah, no, it's not.
23 shots. Take more time.
Yeah, it's. I think you're right. I mean, I'd put the 2 shot maps in there as I usually do, and you're spot on. It's Newcastle had less shots, but they had higher quality. They had almost double the quality of shot. You know, and then the second one they got in our 18-yard box, nearly won the game with it, you know, at that stage, if you know what I mean. I know we went on to win the game.
And they had another break where they scored an offside goal, and that was marginal.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah.
So they have
in both games, I think we've had three marginal offside overturns in our favour this season now for opposition goals, right? Yeah. So
apart from United, yeah.
Yeah. So that's one against us and three in favour. So just talk about that, Barts, generally. I mean, there was a clear pattern of play, wasn't there, with Newcastle in that first half. And whilst they only got in once, which was the 38th minute, the way I would say is that we were on the ragged edge defensively to try and prevent Newcastle threat off relatively simple, you know, in negative transition, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got down here 10 minutes was the first time they broke 4-on-2 on us. So I think it was very early on that they were going to try and capitalise on negative transition. Now, whether they'd worked that out, I'm not going to give Eddie Howe massive credit. I don't know. You know, he might have done. His analytics team has improved at Newcastle. But they clearly had a tactic with Alvaron down the right, whoever was playing on the left, I can't remember his name, instead of St. Maximin, and the pacey guy in the middle, and then they had one from midfield joining in. So Ryan as soon as they win it, Ryan Fraser. So basically, as soon as they won it, they put it in one of the channels and just went at supported. And I mean, it happened two or three times before the goal. For the goal, BVD gets pulled out and Alvaron skips down the line. We get set a little bit because Fab does a thing of dropping in and his partner in midfield does what he does, doesn't go with the runner, and it ends up being from his mistouch, gets played straight back into the space that Henderson's left, and the forward puts it away with a hell of a finish. But it's a really easy, avoidable goal. We give it away again from a very, very simple pass high up the field, and then they just break down the channel and pull VVD out in the middle, which we know, going back to any centre-half, we used to get targeted with Lovren. Now, Lovren had a catalogue of problems to work with, but one of the major things was don't pull him out in the fullback area because he's useless.
Yeah.
You know? And VVD's not useless, but you still don't want your most dominant centre-half being pulled out into the fullback
area. He in turn got pulled out wide because Robbo got done by Almiron, didn't he?
And that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he got done, and because we'd given the ball away, we were set for a pattern to play out that left-hand side.
And then BVD went across to close down the danger for Almiron, and then the goal comes basically down.
To drop in. It's all supposed to jiggle around, but nobody quite did what they're supposed to do, and they weren't quite the intensity to do it at the speed we had done. A couple of mistouches, and they rolled it into space, and he hits a hell of a finish for his first goal in the Premier League.
Yeah. To be fair,
it's a great finish. I mean,
he does look like a bit of a killer, doesn't he?
Have we looked at him before for the club?
Yeah,
he was my first ever scouting report on Tompkins Times about 7 years ago. I've still got a video of his clips. It was called The Next Ibrahimovic, and he was 16 at the time. And that's when we were first linked with him, which is why I did it. And he looked an absolute player. It's such a young age, so you don't know what's going to happen. And then he's gone to two different clubs since. But yeah, he does look like a find. Solid investment, really. Newcastle's transfers have so far been impressive.
Well, they've got Ashton, hasn't they? They've got Ashton from Brighton, who's from us. So it's following our strategy from the book from a while back. How we used to do things.
So one thing that distressed me in that first half was watching that first half, and it's a follow on from the physical stuff that we were talking at the start. Mm. Is that Newcastle seemed stronger, more intense, and quicker than us all over the pitch. And what I did was at halftime, you always look at SofaScore or you know whatever
football
at halftime and stuff like that. And the stats at halftime, just on the most basic stats you can get, right, were absolutely mind boggling. This was on duels, right, and it was 28 duel wins for Newcastle, 9 for us, and 11 aerial duel wins for Newcastle, 1 for us. I don't think I've ever seen such a disparity between one team and another in a 45-minute half as that.
Especially not with us.
No.
Do you know what I mean? At home.
Yeah.
This is like When you posted that, I was like, Dan, you must have got that wrong. You know, when you sort of go back and check it. I just, for a home game, under the lights, we are normally electric. You know, how many times have we said we've got a home game under the lights, we'll win this easy? Yeah, that's just the thing, right? And it's just for us to that, I think, comes into this physical thing that you guys already chatted about in great detail. But yeah, to not be able to do that and to be bearing in mind, Newcastle had a changed midfield and a changed attack and a changed centre-half partnership. They shouldn't have, I don't feel as though they should have done that to us in terms of tackles, interceptions and clearances. No way, not us.
I mean, the interceptions and clearances are less important, really, because that's kind of situational. I should have really propped it after the tackles one, to be fair. But yeah, 11 tackles to one as well. So
yeah. But aerials as well. We've got dominant, most dominant centre half in the league and midfielder. You know, and you're losing 10 aerials. That's just ridiculous. With only 30%, they only had 30% of the ball at the time. You know what I mean? It's if you possession adjust that, that'd be even worse.
It would. Now, Rhodesy, I mean, short of cutting players' hearts out and weighing them, is there any other way you could measure desire other than basic tuples?
No, well, it's interesting because I did the pressing. I think we'll come on to it, but do it now. And the maps and the dashboard look okay, and I'll be honest, when I was doing it, I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, this is okay, this is all right. But there was some group presses, so two and three going together, and it looked really good. But then there was a lot, and this is the worst bit, and it kind of illustrates what you're talking about with the stats there. I hardly noticed Henderson. I'm not piling on, but I've never seen an eight midfielder for us have such a low volume and not notice. So I asked earlier in the group, was he injured the whole game? Because it was like I was going to collect
savage,
a press.
Savage, Brody, savage.
I was going to collect a press and he wasn't even getting near the player, near enough to count it as a press. Yeah. So he was making a run or a sprint to try and get near a player, but he wasn't getting close to him. And then they're just flicking it past him. So he's taken himself out of the game, but not even registering a press. It was mad. It was genuinely. And then you've got Elliot on the other side, who's like a dervish, running about, getting close to players, pressing in groups, knowing when to. And I'm thinking, one guy is such a young lad coming into a system that he's got to learn. And then you've got another guy who's been doing it for 7 years and can't get near his opposition player. And then because he's committing himself and not even getting within the 3 metres, is then leaving the other guy behind him exposed, or the other guy to the left of him exposed. So Newcastle are going, well, we'll just knock it around him and then we've got 1-1 or 2-1.
Rosie, did you also notice he was... I don't know whether he was injured, but there was something not right with him because he was playing so safe with the ball as well. When he did actually have it, he was going sideways. He wasn't looking...
He did a couple of nice through balls, though, didn't he?
In his normal game, you'd see at least four Hendo clips. You know what I mean? Yeah. You'd see those kind of the little incisive stuff. You'd try, and he got to about on the half hour after they scored. I don't know what he just went to play safe. But as you say, he wasn't getting anywhere near on the defensive side, so he couldn't play safe. So he was trying to do something else, and he couldn't even do that. It was weird.
The off the ball performance. He was either injured or he hasn't got a tank anymore. It was I've never seen. Usually, you've got your 2 8s who would get about 30. You know, Naby's usually 30. Ox used to be Henderson.
People Ronaldo was lowish. Ronaldo was lowish, but yeah.
Yeah, but those two, the players that play the 8 role, usually are up there around 30. And you notice them all the time because they're part of the press high. So you try to push teams back. We try to pin them in like we did against Bournemouth. And Palace in the first 30. But this, he wasn't anywhere. And then when he was trying to be somewhere off the ball, he was so far away from the ball, but still committing himself.
So, Rhodesy, we've always talked about, in the past, the importance of pressing. The whole system has to function. So... Exactly. And a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. That applies, absolutely, completely applies, that principle applies for pressing. a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. Did you see any other individual issues in this game with the pressing, or was it all a consequence of one player in the middle?
Well, if you I think the numbers demonstrate that there was lots of good, but then when Newcastle hardly attacked, but when they did, it was through the weakest link. It was in the areas.
Yeah.
They score a goal through that area. They set up a goal through that area. It's just, I can't explain it, but it was, he was, 12, what was it, 12 presses, Dan? Was it 12?
Yeah.
Was it 12 at an 83%? 12 for an 8 is so bad. And then the ones that he did, like, this is madness. I've never seen this. He didn't win possession once. He never pressed the opposition enough for us to get the ball back through himself or a turnover. For comparison, Elliot 6 times, Fabinho 4 times, Firmino 5, Diaz 5, Salah 4, Henderson 12 total presses in that game. I know it was a 60 minutes or something, but 12 total presses. Not once did we get the ball back when he put the effort in off the ball.
I tell you what, that is pretty damning, routine. I'm just going to just back a stage, Darth, because if you look at the blue dots in your image, I think there's 6 or 8 in the half or centre zone in their half, right, the half spaces, yeah?
Yeah.
Which, if you look back at the incomplete passes map that we've done, that's one of the highest dense areas, which shows you, I think, complete almost another layer of that picture, is that we were winning the ball back from a press in a high area and then losing it. We weren't making use of one of the highest mechanisms for creating XG is winning it through a press. And yet we were doing that in the right areas, as the blue dots on your image says. I think that they're successful presses, and then losing the ball.
So on to the second half. I mean, we already touched on the offside goal. But after that scare, Bart, it was a much better second half, wasn't it, from us? I know Newcastle did, I think they eased off a bit. They made some subs, which helped.
They made negative subs, I think, very early on. They got the offside goal was fairly early on into second half, wasn't it?
About 50 minutes, I think.
Yeah, and I think after that didn't go in, they then decided, right, well, we'll try and see this out.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that was what you said, 55 minutes, wasn't it? So yeah, they then had Murphy and Chris Wood came on at 64.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a period. I think I hate using intangibles, but we did seem to come out with a bit more intense. I think if you put in the end snapshot of what you put in for the first half, I think we closed the gap a lot on the terms of aerial duels and the rest of it.
Yeah, the intensity was good. Yeah, it was a lot more. It was almost like they'd had a kick up the ass at half time, wasn't it, to be honest?
Yeah, and again, I know we hate using that kind of phraseology, but it did seem very much like, right, there's a lot more purpose. I actually thought our passing was a bit crisper in the second half. But then there were still little wobbles. Do you know what I mean? There was a few passes between Virgil and Robbo that weren't quite as on it. I've also got down there. Did we miss not have pen? Should we not got a pen? Was that them not got a pen? Maybe they should have got a pen.
But we made
Henderson when he was rugby tackled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But we scored a really nice equaliser, Routy.
Yeah, we did.
We did, and it was the other 8, and it was working down the side of the pitch that was kind of working for us. Or should I say our only 8? It's a Salah cutback, but the build-up's nice. I think it's an 8% chance or 6% chance on some models. Firmino knocks it. It's a lovely, lovely little bit of control and dribble from Salah. Elliot helps to create it, Fabinho as well. So yeah.
I think it's fair to say that after a very, very dodgy first 2 matches of the season, I think Bobby's actually playing really well. I think he played really well in this half here, and he played really well against against Everton.
I thought he's, yeah, I think you're right. He's, I mean, that move was five passes from front to back.
The thing is, it's a counter again. This is the quarter of a chance, isn't it?
It was Ali to Fab to Elliot. He finds Mario Motor, Bobby, and got. He was five or under, which is a real good counterboy move. Something we haven't done for a while, you know, break at speed and with purpose. And I think you're right.
It was a weird pass.
It was, and Bobby was high. Do you know what I mean? Bobby wasn't doing the droppy in stuff that he was doing towards the end of the last season. And to be fair, Fulham, he was high in the right areas, expecting Mo to deliver that ball, and he did, and he put it away. It was a great finish. First time finish. Really good finish.
It's also key to say that a lot of people have been saying Mo's not as involved as normal. He's got four key passes a game. It's higher than anybody else.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
He's got three shots a game. He's got more XG. I mean,
it's a different role, though, isn't it? Right, it's a different role.
It is, and I think it's a role that we kind of shouldn't be using him in.
Yeah,
we don't want Mo Salah the playmaker, do we?
No, we don't. He's the second best passer in the team behind Trent. So he's the second most creative player we've got.
Yeah, I don't think you want it to be dominant. Part of his game, but
no,
the other way around, I'd rather four shots and 2.5 key passes. You know what I mean? I think that kind of balance is more important. But
okay, that's fair enough. So triple sub, Hendo, Robbo, Trent off, Millie, Costas, Mini, and Baby Fab on. And I think it's fair to say that the subs made us better considerably, in conjunction with Newcastle's negative subs. Barts, and I'm gonna controversially say that in this match, probably because Newcastle negative subs as well, James Milner actually played the right back role better than Trent in this for his last 25 minutes, and you know, and Baby Fab was fantastic in his attacking role.
Yeah, I would say it's controversial viewpoint, but no, I think Milner has a role in the squad, doesn't he? And I think he came on and played what he needed to do here very well. I thought the introduction of Baby Fab was key. I think he gave us on the ball quality in the areas where we were getting the ball. So we were making use of where we were getting the balls to make the right passes, which Henderson simply wasn't doing.
Yeah, and then both the fullbacks off. I mean, they are both struggling, I think. And you talk about the core of players physically. I mean, I think they're pretty much near the top of the list. Those two, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I popped in the expected possession value network, which I've done, and if you both fullbacks have actually got the highest EPV for the team, with Henderson third. But what that tells you is that they're struggling to execute the right ball to make advantage of what they should be doing. If you know what I mean, EPV is a probability of the action they'll create from them to literally to a goal. Yeah. So if your two fullbacks, quite rightly, generally should have high EPV values, but because they are both, as we've said, struggling with form and consistency, they're not making the best use of where they are on the pitch and when they're receiving the ball.
Yeah. Now, Rosie, the other thing we need to talk about a lot in this match, and we haven't touched on it deliberately until this point, because I was really hoping that Si was going to have his Discord. We've lost Si for the rest of the pod. Discord's kicked him out, and he can't get back in. So unfortunately, it's just the three of us now. And it's a real shame, because as part of his late watch of this game, Si agreed to collect the data on all of Newcastle's time-wasting from this match. And he had a spreadsheet and his notes ready to go, which will never hear the light of day, no, I'm afraid. But, Rosie, we have a stand-in.
Yes, and this is someone on Tompkins Times, Fair Days, a really good subscriber, and he decided to go through the game. And he did what he considered to be the time-wasted incidents, and he took a clock stop and a restart. So, for example, there was a goal kick after 2 minutes and 16 seconds where, is it Pope, complains of vision issues?
Yeah.
Which was ironic, considering some of the saves he made, but that took 1 minute, 43 seconds. Yeah. Now, I can say As someone who collected the pressing in this game, it was an absolute delight, some of Newcastle's time wasting, because I just kept holding it.
Although there was 102 minutes in total.
But then there was there's a Diaz foul, another minute.
Diaz and Lascelles twice.
Yeah,
that's fine. Two clashes. Yeah, that's fine.
Head clash after 11 minutes, 1 minute 20 seconds. So they wasted 4 minutes and 48 seconds in the first half. Then obviously, coming out in the second half, there's a lot more incidents. They're not as long, apart from the port one in injury time, which thankfully the ref said, right, well, I see what you're doing here. You've done it before. I'm going to carry on. I'm just going to keep playing until I've added on that.
Yeah, just the ones I like, on this one, Rosie, is that 15 minutes, 21 seconds, 33 second delay because Joe Linton went down under no contact. Yeah. Dan Byrne, 41 minutes, 56 seconds. Dan Byrne falls. Along with Sean Longstaff.
Yeah.
So two Newcastle players down, 32 seconds delay there.
40 seconds for Target face doesn't even come in contact.
Yeah, Matt Target, didn't somebody's finger brush his cheek or something?
Yeah.
Which was it? Matt Target, facial injury there, 44 seconds there on 42 minutes, 55 seconds. And then the first of Nick Pope's falling to the ground, catching the ball.
His picture impressions.
16 seconds there at the end of the half. Then Pope in the second half. This is, you know, what you said about the negative subs. There's a lot more incidents in the second half here as well. They obviously gave up after the disallowed goal, and then they went into full time wasting mode there.
Ten men behind the ball, time wasting mode.
Pope takes 30 seconds over a goal kick. 20 seconds over a throw out after a catch from across. I mean, what happened to 6 second rule?
Oh, it's. Yeah. I'll tell you, the worst ones are the ones in. Have you seen the one in the second 92-30? Pope catches ball from cross, heavy fall to ground. 1 minute 33 seconds he takes out of the game.
So
I mean,
another one, lads, and this frustrated me at the time. We brought on 3 subs after 6 and 9 minutes. It took 1 minute and 54 seconds because Henderson was trying to figure out who to give the captain's armband to.
Oh, no, yeah.
He runs off and he doesn't know if Milner's coming on, so then he runs back on.
Gives it a BBD.
And then runs back. I mean...
63 minutes, Joe Linton was down for the third time. Minimal contact here, 53-second delay. Sean Longstaff down for the second time, then 74 minutes, 45 seconds, 56-second delay. And then we get Lascelles down for the third time, Joe Linton for the fourth time with cramp. 77 minutes, 32 seconds, 28 seconds. Then we are kicking the ball away, 86 minutes, 57. That was a 41-second delay. Pope takes 22 seconds over a throw out on 88 minutes, 44 seconds. Another 6 second rule violation there. So Joe Linton 4 times, Lascelles 3 times, Longstaff twice, and then the king of time wasting, having played for 4 years under Sean Dyche.
Yep.
He's learned from the master, hasn't he? Really,
he has indeed.
Yeah, but you know, like you said, 1 minute 33 seconds there in added time, and that's ultimately what was played on the added time to the end of added time.
Yeah.
So talk us through the set piece winner.
So. I'll tell you what was good though. I thought we were talking about Mo's influence, yeah? So in the 96th minute, 97th, Mo gets the ball, runs at them after Joe gives him the ball and wins the corner. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's in dead time and Mo's still going at it to win the corner. We win the corner. It's an outswinger to to mid-zone. Joe wins the header. Mo then goes up for the next header. I'm not sure whether he gets a load of contacts, but it drops and Baby Fab just pops up and smashes it into the net.
Did you not notice the absolute brilliant flick from the Newcastle player?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, whether it was Mario or the Newcastle player. But
player does a back flick and flicks it back into play when he could just leave it to go out. And I guess he's just trying to clear it and do anything, but it's a wonderful bit of skill.
Yeah, I just thought the finish as well. I can't remember the XG for it, but it was absolutely a phenomenal finish from 1.4. Yeah. 1.4. At that stage as a guy of the game for someone so young, I just thought was brilliant and exactly what they deserved. And the best bit was he then goes down injured. Baby Fab fakes an injury in his celebration to kill some more time. I thought it was brilliant.
He goes to the Newcastle corner.
I know. And then fakes an injury. I thought it was brilliant.
Pete Allison copying Pickford season.
That was.
Yeah. So, Rhodesy, I decided on Thursday to go through our favourite ball in playtime on Y Scout. And I was absolutely shocked when I was looking at the Newcastle ball and playtime across their matches. It wasn't just what I thought. When I looked at our match with them, it's 52 minutes 24. That's low for, you know, we know that 55 minutes 11, I think it was last season, was the average of the Premier League, but 52-24 for us. But then I looked at the other Newcastle matches and I thought, hang on, these numbers are scandalous here, the ball in play times. So the Wolves match this season, 45 minutes 30 seconds in the Wolves game, ball in play for Newcastle. Man City, 51-14. Brighton, 44 minutes 33 seconds, less than half the match in play. There was 54 minutes and 27 seconds of dead time in the Brighton game. And then even the Forest home game, which they on the opening day, 49 minutes and 13 ball in play. So their average for the season, 48 minutes, 35 seconds. So they were 16th for ball in play time in the Premier League last season, and they're 15th so far this season.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? It's mind-blowing that the best league in the world apparently has teams who virtually have a full half where the ball's not in play.
Yeah.
They have a full half every game. And Marcotte, I've been listening to Marcotte for years, and he's been saying that they should...
60 minute. Timekeeper.
Get the hour of football being played, get rid of time wasting, so it can never be a tactic. So teams could never use it because you just stop it. And now, it wouldn't stop the Pope diving on the floor, but if you had good refs... that said, right,
you've 6 seconds.
Why are you 6 seconds? Yeah. You've got 6 seconds. If you're 8 seconds, it's a booking. Maybe 9 or 10. But if anything over 10, it's a booking. Done. People aren't going to do it anymore. But the fact they're not enforcing it, but then the fact that he did enforce it in this game because of that stoppage and injury time means that maybe some of the refs are becoming more aware of it. But yeah, like you're saying, that it's peak Pulis, Dan. That's what you said.
Yeah, basically, I said it. This is ingrained in Newcastle's game plan. You know, which considering they went out and spent $200 million last January.
Economics.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Considering they're aspiring to be, I say top side in inverted commas, right? But you know, just said they spent £200 million, right? They've not been short of spending money this summer transfer window. It's a bit of a weird strategy to bring in, because you would have thought with better quality players, you want them to have the ball.
Yeah, if you think you've got better quality, it's in your interest
to have the ball as possible, right?
Yeah,
you've got Bruno in midfield. You've just signed a lad up front who looks very, very good. You've got ball playing centre half if they decide to play him in Botman, and you've got attacking fullbacks. I mean, I would have thought that's a pretty good recipe to have the ball in play, but seemingly has changed his way of playing.
The only interesting question here was, based on what I saw with the Newcastle physicality and the intensity as well, is it actually in their interest as a team to take more time out of the game, have more restarts, so it allows shorter, more intense bursts which suits their players, such as Joe Linton, for example.
And Willock.
Maybe.
I mean, so that's what I mean. You could have a strategy, more restarts, so and with more rest in between. A bit
we're
like Leeds.
Also the tallest team in the league, Dan.
Are they?
Yeah, so it's easy to work for them as well. You've got Joe Linton, you've got Longstaff, you've got... Well,
Bruno's not small, is he?
So Leeds under Bielsa, actually, I looked at this as well. Their ball and play numbers were quite low as well, so that makes sense as well. Is it in their interest to have more time and restart so that they can play with more intensity with what's left?
Particularly if they're playing... If Newcastle are going to keep doing this break at numbers at speed, so put it in the channel and attack with four runners, then it makes a little bit of sense that you want to reduce the amount of times you do that in a game, because that's to run half a length of pitch without the ball, with the ball, is tiring. Yeah.
What I don't get, Dan and Phil, is that after 50 minutes, it's got a counter attack goal that was slightly offside, and then they stopped even trying to do that. Seems to me that if you've got a strategy that's worked for 50-odd minutes and they're still 1-0 up, don't stop doing it. Don't go, right, now I'm going to be negative and just waste a lot of time and my keeper's going to dive on the floor and stuff. Go, right, I think we can catch you again. I think we're going to catch you again.
Yeah, but I think maybe you don't know, was done. Negative. I think their outlet up front might have been out of gas.
Yeah, they brought on Chris.
Anyway, right, we really do need to move on to Everton now. So we're not going to spend as long on this one. You know, there's a few things that we want to discuss. So Liverpool lineup was Tsimikas in for Robertson at left back. Darwin Núñez came straight back in for Bobby Firmino up front. And then in the midfield, we went with the gamble, Bart. So, I mean, you posited whether we might see this. I guess we were all a bit excited, but I guess the things, you know, maybe don't always play out the way you want to.
Yeah, I think Kasai was like saying in a couple of games, it would be quite interesting to see how that will work in midfield. And we got it for against Newcastle tail end, you know, because Baby Fab was playing.
We were chasing the game when looking
back. We were
back
chasing the game, time, game state.
We were throwing players very on. Different. Yeah.
So to start like that, yeah, I think we were all excited because you want to see, I think we've all been very positive about Baby Fab's introduction and give you the option of, do you want to play Milner or do you want to play Baby Fab in midfield? I think a lot of us would have gone, let's just give the kid a game. Let's see how it goes. I think it didn't work out, you know.
I think it's fair to say now that categorically he is not a midfielder and he's not ready to be a midfielder in our system.
I think the latter is true. I'm not saying he's not a midfielder. I'm saying right now he isn't a midfielder.
Yeah. But the thing is, when we signed him, Linders said he is a forward this season. And then
Exactly. So he should never have been.
Yeah, we have.
But I mean, and I think you guys, obviously I was out, but it was, this does come back to an age old question we've always said, is about having the roles in midfield, and our system needs to work with having the right players in the right position. And although it was great to see him go for it, if you like, get two youngsters in two legs, he didn't have the connector.
We've talked about on the UP for years, haven't we, Rhodesy, about how do you play a 10, you know, a number 10 in a 4-3-3, which is the Klopp default. You can't, there's no room for a number 10.
No. You can have the front three, but you need a double pivot, and then you've got a 10.
When Elliot's playing really wide at the moment. He's playing really wide.
So it's really difficult to see how Elliot and Carvalho actually start the same match, unless Carvalho is playing ahead of Diaz. And even then, do you really want Carvalho on the left wing? He really needs to be in that 10 role, right?
I don't know. I think I wouldn't go that far because we can be quite fluid up front. If he starts from the left, his starting position on the left could be. You remember Coutinho was playing in the line? Yeah, you could have a similar kind of node with that. And you could get more out of Fab starting wide left than you do from Diaz.
Yeah. But it's it looks like, you know, he needs to be either that, the 10.
He needs to start,
If we're playing a 4-2-3-1, or maybe he could play in the left wing position for Diaz. It is difficult to see how both Elliot and Carvalho play in the same 11.
Game. Absolutely. Unless you play, I mean, you could play a box. Again, that would be a double pivot situation. But
then you drop one of the forwards, aren't you? So, and you drop in Salah or Núñez or...
Well, you drop Núñez or Bobby, didn't you? So.
Or
Diaz, whatever you want to
do. So it's a harsh lesson learned. It was an interesting experiment. A lot that people wanted to see. But yeah, I think a lot of lessons have been learned even after
were we fortunate that he got a slight knock and had to come off? Would Klopp have changed it regardless?
Should we just say about that one, right? The reaction to that, Bart, was to bring Bobby on.
which was crazy,
but you know.
Yeah, I thought it was, I only watched it today, so I was like, why have we brought... I sat there for 10 minutes sort of going, why has he brought him onto midfield when you've just signed Thiago Light?
Yeah.
You've just signed the connector. And you've got Milner, who he's not the best, but he can play the connector role, right?
And then he should read all the subs seem asked about Facebook. Then he brings Milner on for Trent, and then he gets skinned by Gordon.
Yeah, so he puts him in midfield, and he plays better in midfield. Yeah.
You know.
It just... I didn't... You know, I wrote in my notes going through it, I was... what is going on here? I didn't understand. If you bought Milner and put him in midfield for the start, I think you might have got a purchase in the game a lot earlier on. You know, it seemed we had the last period of game we had with some good, good chances.
We've said Trent's out of form. We've said, you know, there might be an issue with Virgil or Fab, Henderson definitely. But Klopp's made a bad decision there. In terms of, I don't even think in terms of just bringing Firmino on is a bad decision. I think that the Milner sub, he noticed it in 15 minutes and swapped it again, which is good.
We almost spent the whole game chasing our personnel, didn't we? To get you know, and in hindsight, Milner for Carvalho and Gomez, and maybe Matip as well, with Gomez going to right back, you know. So, when you want to sub off Trent, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that was sensible. Yeah. You know, whether you agree with the Trent sub or not, you know, is irrelevant. But to move Gomez to right back where he's played and he can edit, because Everton had pace down the wings, didn't they? So you don't. Putting a 37.
Yeah, it was Damari Gray and basically.
Yeah, that's literally asking them to go and attack your fullback.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't think Tomiska should. Acosta should have come off. To be fair, but
no, he played quite well. I thought Acosta. Yeah. That's we've done all the subs bear here. Now, if Sai was on, and actually, no, before we do that, Rosie, let's give us that match summary. Because there's a lot to like in this one, right? In terms of the numbers and the output.
Yes, and no. It's exactly the same amount of shots from us as there was against Newcastle. 23 shots, but to 14. 1.9 non-penalty XG to 1.4. 20 shots in the box, Dan, which is mind blowing. I keep saying, oh, we need to work better quality shots, but it's like we're working. And it's quite an ability, this. We're working lots of shots and touches in the box and making them really bad. Because none of them are good shots. It's mad. 20 shots to 11 in the box. 8 shots on target. Obviously, Pickford got man of the match. 8 shots to 3 on target. But again, I always come back to it. One big chance each. It's not good enough. It's a terrible ratio of big chances to shots. Big chances to shots in the box. Our shot quality in this game, I've touched on already, I think it was 7%. 44 touches. We are now at a level of our penalty box touches that we've never been at under Klopp. Yep. We've never had this many. But Everton had 27 touches in our box, which is incredibly high for an opposition.
That's a lot for an opposition team.
And their touches tended to be coming from, I know they had quite a few from set pieces, but their touches tended to be coming from counters, which is the best kind of touch in the penalty box.
Yeah.
Because if you're countering, you've only got 2 or 3 players, as opposed to what Newcastle did. They had 8 players, 9 players in their box when we were having our 50 touches. In this game, Everton are having, what, say out of those 27, 15 touches in the box. On counter attacks, it's a massive concern.
Also, Rosie, I said to you, didn't I, when I did the biz before watching the game, first time I'd done it, but one of the things I noticed was a lot of the majority of shots were on the left hand side of our area.
Yes.
So I put the shot map in for Everton and they're in the left hand side. So exactly where we were, where Fab was, baby Fab, Virgil, that's Virgil's side. And Diaz and Nunes not shutting off, so that whole left hand channel was where the ball was coming down, and they had 1, 2, 3.
It's quite interesting that Klopp's first sub was to change the right hand side.
Exactly where Trent might not have been having a great ball on the game, a great game on the ball, shall we say? But the left hand side was where they were getting in.
Yeah, am I the only one who thinks that Trent looks like he's running in treacle at the moment, for want of an expression?
I'm not as fussed as you are, because I think he's working defensively on his game. I do think he's a bit more reserved in his defensive side of his game. And I think you've seen that. I don't think there's as many attacks. Do you know what I mean? I don't think there's as many crosses coming from the right-hand side or shots. So I think that's taking something out of him and it's changing the way he's playing. He's not Trent, is he? But he's also trying to do this new thing. that yeah. we're asking to
I guess
do.
Meant, so. I guess mainly meant just like physically, just in terms of, he just seems to be hard. Yeah. For, he doesn't, yeah I don't,
but anyway. I think that's because he's got, to, he's thinking about too many things. I think
Tompkins keeps saying that he's not tracking very well, Dan. So that kind of fits along what you're saying.
Yeah, but I think he's got too many things to think about at the moment. I think they all have. I think they're all trying to work out this new system and they've got too many things in their head. Systems, as we know, work better when it's like, right, if I go to A, I go to B next. And then when I get to B, I go to C. At the moment, they get into A and they're like, oh, B's not working. Can I go to C? No, I better go back to A again.
We are going to come to that in a minute when we talk about Nunes, right? But if Si was on, right, and I put this on the agenda specifically for him, he would want to talk about another one of our big players, which is Virgil van Dijk. And something that happened in the first 2 minutes of this match that Si was shocked by, and it was Neil Mope. He basically just went straight at Virgil in the you know, on Everton's first attack, right?
Yeah, stood him up, went up, ran at him, and just beat him.
Yeah.
And then did he get a corner off it? I can't remember if the attack. Joe comes in and saves it, I think. But yeah, in the first 5 minutes, just... And I think Si's right. Normally, on a break one of that, Virgil would be like, right, I'm here. And they'd look for a pass out wide. But in that first 5 minutes, he just went, nah, I'm running at you. And ran at him with pace and then beat him and passed him.
So, there's been a lot of discussion. I mean, Virgil hasn't been objectively bad. But what we can say is that he's not been at his normal levels. And is significantly below his very, very high standards. So, but it's always difficult to look at fine stuff in the data, isn't it? But with defenders, because the whole point about events. But there are still things that there's a few stories in there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I said to you, wasn't it? We were chatting in the week, and his aerial ball rate, win rate this season hasn't been that high.
About 5 points lower.
5 points lower. I know this game. I think he was 100% for the Everton game, but previously he was around in the 30s, and that's not Virgil. Virgil's is win the ball in both boxes. That's one of his things. And he hasn't been doing that. He's also, he just hasn't looked, I know this is really untangible, but on the ball, you've got his pass rate completion is lower as well.
It's lower.
It's not, it just looks really hard for him. The number of times he's mishit a ball out to Robbo and it's gone behind him. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying Robbo's, maybe he's a bit too high and there's a bit of communication, but it's not, just not easy for him to bring the ball out and play. So he's not his usual imperious self.
So I've got a few numbers.
I would say, Dan, I just bring you in here because I think it's key. One, this Si was touching on was about an aura thing. So Si thinks the aura's gone and now players aren't scared. But
the best example of that was the Inter Milan game, wasn't it?
Yeah, but you're saying, and I think this is a system thing with your left eight or your left back.
He's exposed.
And he's now... And this, you can bring this in now, making more defensive actions that he didn't used to do.
Yeah, and it's only marginal because Virgil is the player who doesn't commit. That's his style, isn't it? He waits and waits and waits and waits. Waits for the other player, the forward, to make the decision, make the wrong decision, and then pounce. However, he is, even with opto-basic events, he is making more. So last year, if you total up his clearances, blocks, and interceptions per match, last year he was 4.5 per match. This year, 5.5, so one more. He's making slightly more tackles, 0.2 per match, but his win rate is significantly down, 20% down on his tackle win rate. Now, that's a difficult thing with Opta generally, so I'm not going to dwell on that. Last season on FB Ref, he was dribbled past 4 times all season, and he gave away 10 fouls all season. And this season, he's already been dribbled past twice. One of those might have been the Morpay one. Based on what potentially did it look like a dribble pass to you?
I thought it looked like a dribble pass,
And 5 fouls already this season, including the yellow card in this game for all the one on Onana. So he's already committed half the fouls he did last season and half of his dribble pass and had conceded a pen in 6 matches. So, concerns there.
I think, and I know we're talking small samples of 6 games, but for me, that is absolutely vital. If you're having to commit more fouls, it means you're making, I think, a good decision to foul a player when you're being attacked, usually on the counter, because we know the teams that have been attacking us this season is usually on the counter. And then you've got a penalty giveaway, then you've got 2 dribble passes as opposed to 4 over across the season. It's all adding up to, he's like Fab, with the pressing, he's just been exposed more.
Yeah, I think you're right, Rosie. We set a system up to make the attacking, the other team, the opposition's play predictable. So we say, fine, this is us, but you can only attack in these areas, which then Virgil and the other centre-half will mop up and deal with Fab. At the moment, because of the things we spoke about in the previous game, where we're making an error at the key moment, we're being transitioned on quickly, which means that we aren't controlling where they're attacking us, which is exposing Virgil, Fab, and at the moment Gomez. And typically it's happening when one or both of the fullbacks are in attacking. And because this season we're pushing both our eights up, you are typically finding us being attacked 4-on-3, which is incredibly hard to defend against anyway, no matter whether you are also there maybe, as you've touched on the beginning of this pod about the physical demands are not quite there, because it will be every player, it won't be just a few players.
Yeah.
Not being able to deal with it. So I think it's all piecing together to this problem that we've got.
Where team doing to us what we've done to them.
And they're now setting up to do that. Newcastle did it. Everton did it. They put two players in each channel ready to go. Palace did it. They all did it. So they launched the ball into a channel. As soon as they won it, nicked it off us in negative. And then when we were trying to transition, ping in a channel, and they've had two runners in that channel, which is incredibly difficult to defend against.
Yeah.
Normal Virgil would be like, yeah, no worries, I'll sort that out. And the moment he can't do it. Well, he's not doing it as effectively.
And until we show that we can deal with it, opposition teams are going to carry on doing it.
Of course. Well, and I think it will come. I'm trying to be positive here. I think if we get our attacking game working and we increase the quality of our passing,
and the intensity of our pressing.
And the intensity of our pressing. The two come back. Yeah. The opportunity for them to counter us.
And we have the intensity again.
Yeah, right. And the opportunity for them to counter us and therefore cause us to negatively transition will be reduced.
Okay.
And therefore we can deal with it.
So let's talk about the other, the joker in the pack here. We talk about all this happening. And then we have to talk about how does everybody get familiar with a player like Darwin Núñez, who is quite probably the most unique profile footballer I think I've ever seen. Just before we carry on, right? He has had it is mind blowing, isn't it? He's had 59. He hasn't even played two full matches this season, right? But he's had 59 total touches, of which 15 have been shots, and 4 have been chances created for other players. So that's a third of his touches. All of his touches, his ball events, have been either shots or chances created for others. So he's taking a shot every 12 minutes.
7.5 shots per 90, I understand.
Yeah. And he's over 1.04 expected goals plus expected assists per 90 at the moment.
Is 1.75 XG plus XA per 90?
Yeah. On Opta, yeah.
On Understat, sorry.
Yeah, on Understat. Yeah, it's just nuts. Now, okay, so, I mean, Rosie, the one thing that was really weird in the first half was how much time he spent on the left wing. We haven't really got Si to talk to us about that one.
But it little swapping with Diaz going on there.
Yeah, and Diaz going in the centre-forward role for a long period.
Is that pop again, getting something wrong? I didn't understand that.
I thought it was nuts. Stupid. Yeah.
But we did switch it towards the last 10 of the first half, didn't we? Anyway, and then lo and behold, five shots in 18 minutes or something at one point. It's just including Rosie. We have to talk about the first of Jordan Pickford man of match. To be fair to him, the T-Rex arm somehow managed to reach that volley. Unbelievable.
The Torres one, right?
Yeah,
Torres. I love it. Like Gag said, the Torres one, and it took me about 2 minutes to crack on to what he was talking about. Yes. He's just a phenomenon. He seems to, like you say, like a bit like Haaland, and I wouldn't be surprised if we find out at the end of the season that both of them have similar numbers. Maybe not goals, but similar numbers. He just seems to create shot actions at the moment. I am concerned about his pressing. I know Si was going to come on, and Si has talked in the group about...
Si would say that he's very impressed with Darwin's walking. Yeah, he's winning the walking, apparently.
Winning the walking. So I want to put that forward, because I didn't do the pressing in this game, but I do think, as I was watching it live and then watched it again, there's a lot of it, Dan.
The pressing is alarming.
If our key is pressing in the final third, if he's the trigger... He's not triggering anything. Because he's not
the sugar at the moment, but he's also got a 39% receiving success.
Yeah.
Which, considering we were criticising Mané for being at 60 the end of last season, not playing the role, right?
Yeah.
That's very worrying.
We have got to say that, two games. So
that was just the Everton game, but I'm just saying, yeah. There's things, I mean, the other thing about that Torres.
Is it at the moment, to us analysts, he's a complete enigma.
Yeah, he's a bit like Naby. He's a bit like Naby was in midfield, right?
I just can't work him out. He's got unbelievable on-ball numbers. Looks, I think, terrible off the ball in terms of the system that we want to play. But if you're having 7 shots a game and 1.7 XG and XA per 90, I'll keep you.
But you know, the thing... Right, you know that chant, the Torres goal, do you know what I think that annoyed me the most? Is the thing that Sy said about Diaz. Is it Diaz picks the ball up and could have made a very easy chance for Nunes, but he goes around three players and hits post. He's looking for the spectacular.
Oh, from the rebound, yeah.
From the rebound, right? And I'm just saying, and I'm not wanting to make a comparison with players that have left, but I think we would have scored from that with other players there. Because we would have gone, right, what's the percentage? We already knew where the other players were.
I think that's one, you know, Mané would have played the percentage play. Yeah,
you can see Mo would have tapped it in, right? It would have been a pullback and Mo would have gone and tapped it in.
Yeah.
And then that's what a couple of us have said about Diaz, is that he's looking to do that thing of, I can do that. And it's costing us, because that should have been 1-0.
Well, going back to Darwin, right?
Yeah. Go on.
So you basically how does a team figure out how to play with that player and vice versa? Because it's completely alien to everything else that we've ever done.
I think we've spoken about this so much. It's a long time in, but at the moment, I think we have tweaked the system to get the best out of him, but we haven't got the players to play the system.
Right.
Remember, we would normally have pretty much a double pivot with Thiago and Fab behind, right?
Yeah.
So the negative transition element wouldn't be a problem. Yeah?
Yeah.
We'd be sitting in, and it would allow Elliot to do that freer more role rather than sticking to the right, or whoever's playing the right side eight, to pop the balls in. The only thing I think Nunes needs to do more of is actually stay in the width of the 18 of the 6-yard box, which is what Haaland's doing for City.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not going out in the wide channels.
Yeah.
So I think if he does that, and unfortunately, it might take us to get the players back to get the best out of him.
Yeah.
Or a cop just says, look, play within these areas. Maybe it's a communication thing. But you'd think having 3 games off worth of training, they would have worked on it.
Or like you said, just play Artur or Milner as the double pivot.
Yeah, just play that. And then it gives us a platform.
Yeah.
And then Nunes just plays down the middle. Don't worry about the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty simple to do that. He'll get the chances.
Yeah,
because his short locations there are still, 4 of them are in the 6-yard box.
Again, like Si was saying in the group, I don't think our right side is as bad as what people are making out. Just some numbers. Trent is obviously not as good, but he's having 1.5 shots a game and 2.4 key passes. Salah's having 2.8 shots a game, 4 key passes. Elliot's having 2.1 shots a game, 1.5 key passes. We're having like 15 shot creating actions coming down our right hand side. Now, they might not be quality, they might not be high quality, but that doesn't seem to me like a system issue. The issue doesn't seem to me to be on that side of the gate. I'm not saying Trent's in form. I'm not saying. I think Salah's in fine. His form's fine. I think Elliot has been probably our player of the season. So, for me, the right-hand side isn't the issue.
No, I think on the ball, Rosie, I think you're fine. I mean, EPV, Trent's got 0.8, Elliot's got 0.3, and Salah's got 16. So, as a triangle, and Gomez behind them has got 14. So, as that right-hand side triangle, whatever you call that shape, but anyway, two triangles together, should we say. I think that's more than enough expected possession value to create a goal-scoring opportunity. I think the problem in this game was Nunes. It was not connected to any of the front players by no more than four passes.
Let's talk about that average position, Matt, because that's one of the worst we've ever seen. Yeah.
Well, it matches up with the pressing, Matt, which was equally bad as well.
Yeah.
I think it's just goes to show the build that was broken. Ty said that Carvalho was 15, 15 metres too high. 1.5, that is, sorry.
And then too deep, the other way.
Yeah. Yeah, and he said, unfortunately, I think the word he used was hologram in this match. So he just didn't affect the game at all, unfortunately. Yeah. And it affected the build-up of the whole team, didn't it?
Yeah, because I thought Costas was actually having a good game on the ball, but we didn't get the ball to enough of him because the left eight wasn't there to facilitate that move.
Yeah.
And so I'm good when you talk about, when you post a Dan's a big man for the pass maps, and when he posts a pass map and with a little smiley face, you're going, oh yeah, look at that symmetry. Look at how nice that symmetry is. And this one hasn't got any, because there's no connections between anybody other than Gomez to Trent, Gomez to Van Dijk, Van Dijk to Costas, and then the rest of it's just like a massive open space of nothing.
Yeah. Well, you kind of understand why Fab was overrunning midfield, right? Because he's Carvalho and Elliot are so wide, and they're not getting back into the. Do you know what I mean? They're not coming in. Typically, Thiago would have shuffled round, and you get a double pivot. That it would be more of a box between Van Dijk and Gomez and Fab and Thiago. Yeah, so you get that kind of working, but. Because it's not at the moment. It's my only issue with Elliot. I agree with you, Rosie. I don't think the right side is not a problem. I think Elliot off the ball is still too wide.
Yeah,
I don't think especially, we're compact enough off the ball.
Especially because we were expecting him to be the second six in this game as well. Yeah, it was right. Shall we talk about a positive one to finish off? Which is Bobby Firmino again.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Rosie, it's been a while since I've seen Bobby looked this good, in front of goal. I mean, he came on, he made a real difference, didn't he?
He did, and he's at 3.7 shots per 90 in two key passes a game now. It's pressing. I didn't quite remember his figures from his pressing in this game, but I think he was impactful when he came on. Did he come fifth and he only played a half?
Yeah.
In terms of total, it's great to see. I think his numbers for this calendar year have been good as well.
Yeah.
But it's just the more options we've got. I think Firmino, we talked about it last week, but Firmino, in terms of a legend at Liverpool, is definitely a bona fide one. And can we get another 18 months? Can his lack of pace, can his age not impact on his performance? Can we get to 34, 35 with Firmino just doing 60 minutes a game, just doing that pressing, that leading the line that I think Nunes can't do at the moment?
Yeah.
Can we have a Firmino as the 10 and then bring on Carvalho? Can we have
maybe. Yeah.
Doing the off the ball work and then doing some of the link up play that I don't think Nunes has shown yet. Can we have someone doing that and then bringing Nunes into play who's still having
seven? So there was a good shot from Bobby for save low down on his right. The bullet header.
Ball against Newcastle.
Yeah, bullet header one meter either side of that of Pickford, and that's absolutely ripped.
I think go down is a big chance, Dan, that you said would.
I can't believe that. I mean, he's like 5 meters out and he absolutely plants it, doesn't he? You know, but
he also got 0.34 xG chain for only half a game.
Yeah, there was another good save from Pickford low down to Elliott as well at the end of the first half, and then the one from Salah, he literally just brushes it onto the post in stoppage time. What final question for me? Just on a nerdy one, right? OptiVision, again, Rhodesy, right? What do we think about them giving Diogo Jota the biggest chance of the match from us? You know, it wasn't even a chance. It was just a ricochet that he didn't get his, you know, foot to, right? Was it really our biggest chance of the match?
So,
how would you stand?
It's mad, because Understat have got that Jota chance at 0.15 and Opta have got it at 0.46. The header that he can't even get to, that just comes off the corner of his head because he can't get his head around it, goes at a 0.2 chance on Opta and goes at a 0.08 chance on Understat. This OptiVision thing, like, this is the first time this season that Opta's been the highest for us. So, Stats Bomb, but that's what made me think about it. Stats Bomb has got a 2.2 for this game, and Octo has got a 2.9, which is the same. So it's like they're using the same kind of stuff. But then InfoGoals have got us at 2.25.
Yeah.
Are we missing this?
I guess I wasn't sure that that Jota one at the end was even a shot, really. What do you think, Bart? Was it a shot?
It tries to get
his... Yeah, it's an attempt, isn't it?
Oh, goal.
Yeah, it's... When I first saw it, I was like, has he not scored there? And then you watch it again, you think, oh, okay. But I think it's a little high. I think Oxford are giving it a little high. I'm just looking for the values now. I've understood, really, what was the highest one they gave.
Yeah, definitely teething problems, though, for Opta, right?
Yeah. I'm not convinced by their model, I have to say. Understat, for me, are far more reliable in looking at it again, yeah, that looks right.
Yeah.
See, right. I would say that, I know we'd love an XG channel here, but I've just put the values there. I've done the Opta values and the Understat values from the same shots. I would say that Opta have got this game badly wrong. The only one where it's comparable is the Neil Maupay shot on 64 minutes, which is the amazing save from Alisson, yeah?
Yeah.
0.53 to 0.63. That's fine. I like the Maupay shot, 0.28, that deflects to Tom Davis and he curls it onto the post. Again, I don't mind any of that. I don't understand what Understat are doing there. I think they've got that wrong.
Because the Davis one, he literally had to poke it first time, didn't he?
But I mean, he's looking at the location and the situation, and he's just got to beat the keeper. And it's a transition, so it's come off a deflected shot. But I cannot understand their values for Jota's two chances.
No,
I can't. The greatest player in history that gone into Opta's numbers for his 8 minutes this season.
Yeah. Anyway, on a positive, it is great to see him back on the pitch. Anyway, that's at least.
Yeah, and he could have won it, couldn't he? I suppose could have won the game. But yeah, what do you think cost us? What do you think it cost us chance in the first half?
When he puts it back across goal and goes out.
I just thought he would. I thought he should.
Well, when he bams it,
should have done better.
Right?
Yeah, I think he should have. Because I think he had a lot of the goal to aim at, and
Anyway, we really do have to wrap it up, chaps. Yeah, no, but we will be back next Monday for the double header of Napoli and, help me out, guys.
Chelsea, isn't it?
Is it Chelsea?
No. Is it Chelsea? No.
I don't know. I don't know the next game. Sorry, I was just trying to find trying to stop the recording.
It is Wolves.
Napoli and Wolves. Right. Yep. We will be back 8:30 next week to discuss that, and hopefully it's not going to be quite as action packed this time as well. And we're going to have a couple of nice wins for the Reds. But until then, up the Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement. And we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.